play nice, everyone. Make sure that nobody gets left behind. When we are in the gym, no man or woman gets left behind. These are the rules. This happens to be what I hang my hat on. I'm only able to be a coach. Quality coaches are only coaches because we have teams that are willing to let us coach them for very specific reasons. Your job on the back end is to be a quality team member. And that doesn't go very easily for everybody. Some of us are natural born, you can say, introverts, lone wolves. Some of us are just better at being resourceful. And if I have all my resources, it runs counter to give them to you, or else we'll both starve if this was kind of a apocalyptic situation. So what we're going to talk about today, all right, is you guys playing nice, being on a team with others, even if maybe you don't want to be, and how much that does benefit us. And the books we're going to talk about right here, or maybe even take inspiration from, are Woolbin, Peter Woolbin's The Hidden Life of Trees, and Robin Wall Kimmerer's Braiding Sweetgrass. We're going to take a little bit of it. Sounds like we're going to be on a coffee flip hippie trip right quick here on Ego Killer Motivation. And thank God it's Monday, because it gives us another chance to swing that axe. And you're going to start doing that at CoachJohanCSCS.com. I have that jumpstart. It's cooking. It's waiting for you to download so that you can answer every simple nutrition question you can possibly have. And then from there, answer those secondary questions. Let me evaluate every protein for you. Let me think about how food labels need to be broken down and how quickly I can do that. All that is there for you guys. So download that. I encourage you guys to take part in some team-ish, at least a little bit, in your life. Nowadays, this is less popular. But once upon a time, we emphasized it. You need to work with a collection of people in order to thrive at some point going forward, especially when you're talking about your work professional life too. I almost feel like when I hear from you guys who work corporate jobs where you have to be at a computer, at a desk, you have to take a certain lunch hour or whatever it might be, you have the option to go into a remote learning situation. I've been hearing from you guys for years, and of course, I'm living right here in the tech hub of the world. I think what I noticed about you guys is I feel like sometimes your jobs just force you guys to be in teams with each other. Let me know if I'm wrong in the comments. Do your jobs just force you to be in teams with each other? Like, even if the task doesn't require like all this team collaboration, recognition from the top that team interaction is so vitally important that the whole tech industry like requires you to work in teams. It's not like that movie Grandma's Boy, right? You remember that movie Grandma's Boy, where the phenom, the great gaming phenom, was so good at making games that he could work in his own office by himself, but then he came out acting like a robot, bzz, bzz, and all that. I feel like that's what we're afraid are going to happen to our very valuable tech industry workers. And so we have all manner of team challenges. Some of you guys have done team like workshops where you have to run obstacle courses or go zip lining and things like that. And that's because we understand that working together, symbiosis, motivates you guys. Now, in that context, it's all about productivity. If you're on a team of athletes, right? Or you're going to do an obstacle course race and you have a team. That's not necessarily about productivity. That's something a little bit more pure and beautiful. It's about that motivation right there. I get to see you working stupid hard every day at 6 p.m. That means I cannot be late. I have to be there ready to get after it at 6 o'clock every single day. And if I'm not, well, guess what? I'm slipping, and I get to watch your taillights zip away from me. And there is nothing more stinging than that. Being in a team dynamic, even if the team members maybe need to be a little bit more efficient, right? Is super duper healthy. This is symbiosis at its finest, symbiotic motivation right there at its finest. And some of the key features that these, that the literature that I'm going to talk about later, this hippy dippy right here tells us, is that there's a lot we can learn from looking out the window and seeing how nature rocks together. We're going to break it all the way down, I promise. Let's go. Let me know in the comments how attuned to nature you guys are. I know about this generation of youngsters, you Zoomers, like, you guys don't like being outside at all, do you? The outdoors has, you know, all kinds of creatures, all measures of ingestible oxygen, all that. And you guys don't like that, right? It's like you can't detect that there's pixels in the air. You guys hate that. But what about everybody else? All right, including you Zoomers. What do you guys think? Let me know in the comments here in the Spotify suggestions right here. How much do you get inspiration from nature? Personally speaking, I get a ton of it. There's something about being out there. I think it comes from when I was a kid. I used to have to traverse on the bus a lot. And just getting the chance to sit down and gaze out the window for long periods of time, it was really therapeutic, and it's something that I carried with me. It was just easier for me to tap in to nature. My family, of course, where they're from, it's all about nature. I probably got relatives right now straight up living off the land still because it's all about nature. Of course, when you talk about parts of Jamaica, you're seeing some of the most beautiful nature, natural arrangements, ecosystems on the whole planet. And so that stuff, for me, becomes hyper-motivational. For other people, it does nothing. Like, it's like looking at a freaking TV of nature. Just who cares? Oh, there's a fucking tree. Trees, they're everywhere. I can't relate. I mean, could never be me. But there are people out there that are just disinterested in the fact that, like, the sky isn't really blue, but we perceive it that way. Or that, you know, there's all manner of interactions with the mycology beneath your feet, and mushrooms are communicating with each other, but you'll never know when they decide to come to surface. No one knows. Unless you find that chanterelle. You find that chanterelle, definitely keep it to yourself. Because no, if I find that location, I'm going to keep it to myself. Somehow, the planet figured it out. I'm not telling where. I'm not telling you. I know I'm worth $2,000 an ounce. You're not going to know when and where I'm coming out the ground. But the symbiosis of nature. There's mutualism. We can already detect what that is. That's where I and me and you, we're cool. We work together really well. When I win, there's something that I did that helps you win and vice versa. Okay? This is where we both do different things that benefit our ultimate goal. It's where I learn that I can run on the treadmill with these specific shoes with the wide toe box and the lowered flattened arch. And then I tell everybody, hey, you got to cop these shoes. And then everybody runs a little bit better. Now we're running faster when we train for this obstacle course race, this mythical obstacle course race. And then our times get better. Now everybody's kind of working harder. Somebody else in the crew might be like, my splits just got better. Check them out. Now we all have a goal to work toward. It's birds. It's bees. It's pollinators. Going from one flower, pollinating that one with all the crap all over its wings, and going to another flower. And now we have cross-pollination. Beautiful new, you know, sunflowers or daisies pop up out the ground. Flowers benefit from that pollination and that beautiful nectar from the bees. All of this sounds wildly inappropriate, by the way. I don't know how we've kind of spun the vernacular of pollination. In any event, I mean, look, we do the same thing with the bacteria in our gut. They live there. They get that nice, warm, huge living space for pennies on the dollar. That's some great location, locale, some real estate right there in the gut. The bacteria get to chill over there. They get to climb up and down those many folds, living in that 5-mile stretch of land right there, that off the turnpike right there. And we get to break down all the weird crap that we eat. You eat a box of Madelines. Well, guess what? Your bacteria in your gut is like, cool, I got it. Don't worry about it. Thanks for letting me squat here. You guys go ahead and you eat that big ass kale salad, which I'm going to go ahead and say, don't do that unless you have serious, like, soluble fiber issues. Your gut's going to try to, it doesn't break that down necessarily, right? But it's going to try to, and maybe it'll extract some soluble fiber and the rest it'll just pass along. Those things protect us too. They make vitamins out of what we eat. They help synthesize some of that stuff. It's a mutual beneficial relationship. In your jobs, my friends, it's best to find somebody. I mean, one of the coolest people I ever met, became a best friend of mine, was someone that I met at work, and I didn't know that buddy was a judo Olympian. And he was more of a mentor, though. All right, and that's something that happens a lot in fighting and everything like that. That's my sensei. That's my guy. That's my 100 grand. But at the same time, inside those gym walls, he was teaching me a lot about that. We'll get to that in a minute. That's more of a mentorship. But if you meet somebody, for example, know a cat too from that same gym who ended up inventing the mobility stick. And inside the gym we did together, we were teaching classes. And we taught these badass classes, and these classes were half boxing, half kettlebells. He was the only dude inside the gym that was RKC2 certified, which is Russian Kettlebell Confederation, I think. Like, really? We're confederating all of the kettlebell modalities? There was the Northwest kettlebell modality, right? And they were out there in the sequoia trees swinging kettlebells next to, you know, Puget Sound. And then there was the Southern California guy. Like, okay, Russian kettlebell, whatever. But the Russian Kettlebell Confederation? Let me know if that's what RKC stands for. He was the only one. He was the highest level performer of kettlebells in the gym. And we decided to do a little hybrid class. I know it's a really good class. The people who participated in it were absolute monsters. Couldn't believe in what good shape they were. Made a lot of noise. And we taught that. That was mutualism. I knew one thing he wanted to learn. And I learned the skill of kettlebells from him. And I was able to teach it. And in fact, I've worked with RKC guys over the years. And they've said, yo, your kettlebell techniques are real. They're solid. They're solid for not having gotten certified over the years. And I said, thank you, comrade. Now, the next type right here, all right, is commensalism. Inside your jobs, let me go back real quick. Inside your jobs, it's important for you guys to find something that is mutual inside your life. This is the dynamic of team that I think is of the utmost benefit and use for you if you're a lone wolf, is that there is a mutual benefit somewhere. You might have a team of 50 people. Someone is running parallel with your need, a situation that you can, whose plate you can eat off of, and them yours, and it will help both of you rise up. Without being so parabolic and speaking in parables, somebody might be really good at presenting, you not so good at presenting, but really good at creating slides. Work together with someone whose skill is better than yours in one area that you can assist in theirs. But work together. Don't let someone eat off of your plate without then giving you an empty vessel to fill up water with. All right, let's move on to number two, commensalism. And remember, all of this stuff is us also letting go. Letting go of our fear of working with teams, at least in some capacity. At least in some capacity. One species is going to benefit while the other is neither helped nor harmed. I always think about coaching in this capacity. And now I've been in the situation and I've had like super coaches who are like, you know, national level type guys because they were men. I've had exceptional teachers in my life who were women, but they got paid to be a coach, like at the teacher level. It's not like they're just teaching out of the goodness of their heart, right? Whereas a lot of athletic coaches start with that passion to do what they do out of the goodness of the heart. And the money don't even usually match up, although it doesn't for teachers either, but that money doesn't usually ever match up too. So you really get a sense that, yo, you're doing this out of the goodness of your heart. And as someone that has been called coach and has been humbled by the nomenclature, I guess, it is a, and to see other people who are exceptional at the job of being a coach that I've worked with at the, again, national level and down, one person gets a ride, gets the benefit, gets the knowledge, and the coach maybe doesn't get anything, right? In nature, this is called commensalism. We can talk about certain ferns that grow on the trees who get access to sunlight, and the tree just says, cool, you ain't, you know, you're not taking my phosphorus. You're not bad to look at. Good. Stay there. I'm good. I don't have to worry about it. Or some of these barnacles or whatever that hang out with the giant whales and they just eat the leftovers. That whale's saving that snack for later, right? They got that crumb crusher saving that snack for later and the barnacle will go ahead and eat that all up. And the whale's just like, well, whatever. Maybe they use organisms in this particular situation for transportation, right? There's a lot of that. We don't necessarily ever get used for transportation. That must be the worst. But there are situations where you guys will sign up and work with coaches, be on a team. And your goal here, if you're on a team at your job site, is to not be, is definitely to be a squeaky wheel and volunteer as much as you can to learn. The goal here is learning. However, remembering too, when our relationship is commensal. Knowing that, hey, I'm here in this for me, and I'm going to seek the mentorship of somebody else who knows, who's walked that path before, so that I can learn. Remembering that this is a process of learning where I'm strengthening my skill set with knowledge, with someone else's experience. Someone else already trotted the hard road, and I'm literally just asking them how to do it on my own. They did most of the work. I'm just going to say, hey, I know you did most of the work, but I need to know how to do this differently. And all right, and the last thing that we could talk about is parasitism. And we all remember what the parasite was. The parasite was simply looking to take all of your nutrients, all of your hard work, and use it for themselves, leaving you depleted. In the context of a team dynamic, we hope that parasitism is just really kind of excised early on, right? That's just kind of a heavy concept for us to manage on any type of team environment. And maybe even the team environment is meant to weed that out to some degree. I know I've been on a team once, and what you guys might notice is the team dynamic or the team energy starts to get downplayed or shifted or maybe even like eroded because you got somebody up in there that's hating. They're on that hate. Every time they pull up, they're negative, whatever it might be. It could be 1,000 different things, but truthfully, when that starts to happen, teams tend to galvanize around the idea that we need to remove this source of negative energy. I remember that on a team. I was on a team a long time ago. I was the youngest person on this team. It was a semi-pro team. And they were mad, boy. They were mad at Rodney. Rodney used to pull up. He used to talk the most. But I was always cool with Rodney. I wanted to be a running back when I got there. And eventually I decided to work my way over to the defense. This is a cardinal sin early on in this training camp, but I felt like, hey, this is the best time to make a move. And I did that, and I was cool with Rodney early on. He's a little bit older than me. And boy, Rodney used to talk the most trash. He was a good running back. He was strong. He's probably like 220, 5'10". And the thing was, he would talk the most. And after a while, I guess it got around to most people that Rodney wasn't a very good teammate because he was talking a little bit too much. Not about any one thing in particular, but maybe talking too much at a time where he should have been listening a little bit more. And they had a vote. At one point, they went to everybody on the offensive side of the ball first, and they said, do you feel like you can have a team with Rodney on there? Me, I said yes. And Rodney has done nothing but try to help me out. And yeah, he has his negative side in terms of he is, you know, he may be running his mouth a little bit too much. But is that a reason for us to, like, treat him like a fentanyl addict? I don't think so. In any event, Rodney got kicked off the team. And it's because enough people decided that they had had enough of his shtick. And I never saw him again. Last time I saw him, his t-shirt was hanging out of the back of his jersey, and he was holding on to his, he was still wearing his helmet and no thigh pads, and that was it. Just saw him walking off the field last time I ever saw him, and coach came and said, hey, the number was, you know, 14. Once 14 people decided that he wasn't good for the team, we decided to let him go. I said, dang. Cold world right there. Teams are probably designed to remove that situation. And let's hope that you are never put in that situation, because I feel like you have to do quite a bit to make a group of not even paid professionals, semi-professionals, decide that you are just not good enough to not get paid for this. And if we're talking about something a little bit more fiduciarily responsible, let's not hope that you're ever in a situation where people say, hey, you should not get paid for this, because that in and of itself is all bad, too. But parasitic relationships, I mean, even the word parasite speaks to something real dark. No one wants to even have someone parasitic around them. Now, let alone, like, have them be one of your people, one of your crew, one of your, you know, one of the homies. It is a problem. If on a team you find someone that has that mentality, they're going to steal all your work. They're not going to tell who really turned that in, who came up with the ideas. This parasite's not going to tell anyone. Just this parasite. We don't want that around. And our systems are geared towards that. All right. So those are the three. Those are the three. We're talking mutual beneficial. Find somebody else that is on the come up like you are. Someone that might need some of your skill to help the greater good, and also someone whose skill helps your greater good. We're talking that commensalism, a coaching, a mentor-mentee type relationship. Somebody who, man, they have coping skills with being able to dole out lots of information to other people for them to be able to bless other people with skill-based knowledge, right? With acumen, with tricks of the trade, and to not leave themselves burned out. This is a commensal relationship. And as long as you're somebody who is not the third type parasitic in that commensalism, you could live, you could thrive, you could eat. Everybody can eat. But when you start becoming a drain, right? When your coach is like, you owe your coach money now or something like that. I've seen that happen too in the wrong direction also. When that starts to happen and you become a little, or people around you become a little bit more of a drain on your life force and your energy, that's when we want to avoid those relationships together. And nature teaches us this. It's pretty simplistic. Parasites kill. Mutual organisms thrive, and so do commensal ones. They thrive. Talking about thriving, we're talking about knowing what we know goes into our body. and knowing more about what goes into our body makes us brilliant eaters, makes us happy, makes us strong. And to be able to answer every other question that someone might have about nutrition, whether that's the friend or the family member or it's ourself, being prepared when you walk up inside that whole body section of your supermarket, you're ready. And that's because you've downloaded at CoachJohanCSCS.com that PDF. And that'll make you like 10% smarter about your nutrition day one. And then if you keep reading all 80 pages of that thing, you get a lot smarter. So go ahead and download that. It's free. It's waiting for you. We're going to break down the book. All right, Hidden Life of Trees and Braiding Sweetgrass. Now, I know a little bit about these books. We talk about these four themes. Community over the individual. What do you guys think about that? Valuing community over the individual. This is a beneficial thing, unless you're on the individual side. You're an individual worker on a team, and your team is okay. Well, then the community ain't really helping me out. I'm actually having to do the most amount of work around here. You folks are just bringing me down. In the book, it's the tendency to prioritize personal gain over collective well-being. This is a very westernized idea of how we move. This, no one will crucify you. No one will crucify you if you stunt whenever you win and nobody else wins. There is nothing wrong with that. Where I feel like if you're on the physical 100 over there, right, in the South Korea right there, you're doing that physical 100, I'm trying to win this thing, but I want to see everybody else have success too. I feel like that's the motif on that show also. It's like everybody is enamored with the skill set of everybody else. Could be that Korean type of wrestling, or it could be someone over here who's a MMA fighter, and that person over there is super physical for what she does, and old buddy over here who's a bodybuilder. I feel like they all want each other to kind of win, you know, at the end of the day. All except for like the special forces cats. They seem to like be mostly indifferent and still and still pretty altruistic at the same time somehow. But in our culture, we really don't mind if you stunt when you win. Like, I won, let me show off my trophies, my honor. But what do you guys think about the fact that I'm supposed to wait for everybody to cross the finish line? I know that inside the gym right here where I'm at, I'm teaching a group of folks to be a little bit more community-centric. Not saying that you weren't before, but I think that there's some value in everybody being able to win and carry each other over the finish line, even if it doesn't mean first place. Think about it like this. If I could go ahead and help you get over the finish line, you, and you, how many of us made it versus how many of them? All of us. None of us got first, second place, but we got more over the finish line. I think that's something noble and dope. Theme number two, reciprocity. Let me try that again. Reciprocity with nature. The theme consists of the anthropocentric view that nature is merely a resource for exploitation. And look, there is so much going on with the fact that nature isn't just for us to be used up. I think that there is a finite nature, a finite resource within nature. It's something that we can't see. At the same time, I do believe that nature is going to thrive whether or not we're here or not as humans. And maybe one of the most contributing factors, even though it is not contributing to nature, is our ability to strip away all of what nature could be without us. Meaning, are we just here to like take and take? You know what I mean? Once again, Mother Nature's going to do what Mother Nature does. Mother Nature glances in Sushin Aya what it is we do as humans. We're only here for a blink in time anyway, and we'll continue to thrive. Mother Nature wins all the time, I feel like, at the end of the day. But I also feel like we do have a duty to kill what we eat. And if we do that, I think it makes us more inborn, better humans. And we're better humans with the land, the world around us. We're a little bit better. there are those of us out there that were really good with communing with nature and really bad with communing with European settlers and then just selling off whole islands for pennies on the dollar. I understand that. So I don't think that there is some inverse relationship between like executive function and loving nature, although the hippies in Santa Cruz say otherwise. But I will say this. I think that there is a real respect and a real life-giving nature. Breathlessness, a conviviality. I'm able to breathe again when I'm standing on the coastline and those waves just crash around you. There's something to that. And giving back to that, I think, only makes us more whole as people because there's something inside of us. We are made of the same organic matter. And I think that there is a gratefulness that we're able to appreciate with nature. So I do think that there is something to be said and there is worth, there's value in giving back to nature a little bit, you know, not really, you know, when I was on a path to kind of kill off the last of the ego, I found myself never littering, whereas once upon a time I wouldn't have cared. To this day, I don't litter a whole lot at all. And when I do, I remember it. And it's because of those times that I went through where I kind of understood like, well, this ain't really my trash can. It's just that simple. Like, there are trash cans in the world. Just the concrete and the fucking trees just aren't, they're just not it. So maybe I could wait, right? And look, you know, we're in California out here. I'm in California. Those freeway corners, they're disasters. So the last two, we'll go through them kind of quicker. Learning from the least, and this perspective challenges that certain roles of individuals in societies are undervalued, all right? And we can't learn from those folks who don't make the higher tax bracket, right? Who pay the most in taxes, actually, per what they make. And in nature, we easily understand the role of an ant, a tiny little ant, and how important having those colonies around might be for a larger ecosystem. We totally understand that with those damn bees, those beautiful buzzing bees and their cousins that come raw with the stingers, right? We understand that there's symbiosis from learning from the least. Everybody can contribute together. Well, take that with you inside of the job site. Take that with you when you have somebody on your team that's kind of slow with the business, slow to catch on, not reading the room correctly. Understand that you can at least learn from it. It's a lesson that as someone who has trained in many fight gyms over the years and has it reinforced now from who I train with these days, you can always learn more. I mean, there is a time where I've had people train together and you might be 6 foot and she's over here at 5'5" and you're going to be doing some drills together. For me personally, when I see like that setup happening and then I see like, oh, let's not let that setup happening. To me, it tells me like, we're not really practicing then. Because there is definitely almost always, almost something that you can learn from working with somebody that is different than you inside the fight gym where they're not hitting as hard as you and maybe they're a lot quicker or they're lighter. Even if they're a different like sex than you, there's always something that you can learn from somebody else, right? Maybe they have one really good punch. Maybe they have one really good skill in the boardroom. Maybe they have one really, really, really skill with handling their boss, your boss, at work. And so they suck at everything else, but when you need them to put on that slick mouthpiece so that you guys could leave early or not get stuck with the toughest jobs, turn them on. Hit that switch in the back. Pop their battery in. Let them go to work. When you're in the gym, right? When I'm in the gym and I'm working with someone that I know is not the same size as me, I certainly don't write them off, right? I don't write them off. It's literally martial arts. It's literally propagated because there are smaller people in the world who don't want to be victimized simply because they're smaller. And because of that, martial arts, jiu-jitsu, judo, the dude who invented judo was supposedly this diminutive small dude and then took that thing on the road. And you see what happened from that, right? Jiu-jitsu and more competition judo. Literally, you can learn stuff in the gym, in the fight gym, for people who are smaller than you. And don't let me tell that same or prove that same or hammer home that same point in the wrestling or jiu-jitsu room. Please don't believe that you have someone that's a different sex that you're just about to dominate them. You know, these, that's not it. Let me tell you real quick. Don't go in there thinking that. If you're ever going to go in there, if you're not, well, just use the same mentality, but never that. Never go in thinking that just because you're sizable over somebody that you're going to have the physical advantage. I can tell you 1,000 times over, it doesn't work that way. It does not work that way. It sometimes does when the body fat's really low. It doesn't work that way. And listen, lastly, we're talking adaptation and change. All right, since ecosystems adapt, we can underline the importance and the willingness to change. We have to change. So how might we as a society better embrace it, knowing that ecosystems change naturally? You want to make sure that you have a core sense of what it is that you do, how you move, when to press, pull the trigger. It's important for you to stand on your square. It's important for you to always know that, yo, this is how we rock. This is how this tribe rocks. This is how my household rocks. This is the rules that we follow inside the classroom. This is our ethos. This is our core competency and ethos as a company. Our mission is on the wall, 100%. But the most ego thing you can do is stick to that at all costs, forgetting that nature is entropy. Nature is literally synonymous with entropy, and ecosystems shift and change all the time. All the time. Just let it turn winter and watch all those birds be like, I'm out. Where's Tora Tora? That way? Cool. Time to go. All right, my friends. It's not complex, but it is important that we adapt to change when it happens and make sure that we are marching towards that change, not just letting it hit us in the face and be like, what happened? Why didn't anything? Because you never changed. You didn't change your style. I noticed this for you guys too a lot of the times in life when you're doing the same stuff, right? And the weight keeps creeping back on. You have to make an abject decision to change. And I'll be happy if you physically and behavior-wise change anything. Anything. You used to go to the supermarket on Sundays every day, every week. Go on Saturday. Like, that's the first thing you need to do to rock the foundation of similarity, comfortability, and shake up the ecosystem. Core ethos. I get my work done on Sunday. I go ahead and do that shopping. Seasons. They shift. Ecosystems change. All right. Well, let me try something different. Maybe the difference in attitude helps me shop with a much open heart, more open eyes. And that peripheral vision helps me choose better foods for myself. It allows me an openness in thought that allows me to make decisions based not on the now, not on what was, but what should be different going forward. And I'm going to tell you right now, my friends, it just takes that much in order for you guys to change. It just takes that much of a nudge for full-scale change to happen. And then you look back on it and be like, it was just a little nudge. And here we go with the change. All right, my friends, I'm going to leave you with that right there. Ego killer motivation. It's been that. And I hope it's been all it could be for you guys. It's another TGIM. So make sure that this week is a huge week for you. Go to the YouTube. Look at some more of my masterclass nutrition videos. Then the website. Download that masterclass in PDF form. Most of all, till the next one, stay all the way up.